Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel. So here we are, my goodness, almost 2 years into the Russo-Ukrainian war since Putin's fascist regime began its illegal and unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. And over the past few days, there's been a recrudescence of this bombardment of cities led by Russia, and the Ukrainians have responded in kind. So Kyiv was it most of October and November without any bombardments. It was 52 days without any aerial attacks, but this was just the calm before the storm. And why was there such respite? Well, it's obviously not humanitarian considerations. Those don't feature. Putin is utterly cold-hearted, inhumane, completely dishonorable, merciless, cruel, savage, and sadistic. It was simply conserving a supply of missiles so it could fire bigger salvos of missiles, rockets, and drones at the Ukrainian capital, several other Ukrainian cities, such as Kharkiv, Odessa, and others. And there's obviously ongoing ground assaults by the Russians on Avdiivka and Kupiansk. Kupiansk is in the very northeastern corner of Ukraine, so the Rus keeps an attack from the north there and the east. And obviously it's quite a disgrace for the Russians have not taken this so far into the war. Admittedly, on the eastern front, they're really concentrating on the southern section of it, on Donetsk and Lugansk oblasts or regions, not attacking directly from the north very much. They can really only do one main axis of advance. But Avdiivka has been largely reduced to rubble. The Russians are blasting it to even finer rubble, really just to make it indefensible because there are no buildings, there are almost no trees, no base in which to take cover. And the Ukrainians are going to eventually be pushed out of there. So their dogged resistance has really slowed the Russians down. And I said this obviously before winter came, is by bombarding each other's cities. And Russia has the upper hand there because of they're having something like 1,000 of these missiles at a time, producing about 100 a month. And Ukraine has this dwindling stock of missiles. So in the past 5 days, leading up until the 2nd of January, that was about 500 missiles, drones, and rockets that the Russians had launched, according to Ukrainian sources. Probably a small exaggeration. So, and Ukraine's air defense claims to be highly effectual, intercepting 95% of these projectiles. Again, that's probably an overstatement. But there was one attack the 29th of December when 32 Ukrainians died in Kyiv. Now, according to the Ukrainian government, every single one of them was a civilian, which might be true. But you always have to have a bit of a health warning because they don't want to say soldiers, a bit demoralizing, and makes it seem like a legitimate military attack. Whereas if civilians died, it reflects badly on the Russians and it enrages the Ukrainian populace to want to keep resisting. Now, you might say, well, that could go the other way because it intimidates them. Say, well, even the civilians aren't safe in this war. Let's run up the white flag, not the red flag. They might see red. So in the 5 days, Ukraine says that about 60 people have been killed now, several times that number wounded. Even Lviv in the west, which has been almost unscathed in the war so far, has suffered strikes. So Russia proving it can really reach anywhere within Ukrainian territory. Zaporizhia, that southern city. Remember, Zaporizhia is the capital of Zaporizhia region that Russia claims to have integrated entirely into the Russian Federation. Remember, of the five regions annexed since 2014, it only controls the capital of one of them. Sevastopol is in the capital of Crimea. Used to control Kherson city, but lost that last year. Anyway, so the 2nd of January was a particularly prolonged strike, 6 hours on Ukraine. And some of these Russian missiles are actually fairly sophisticated, can actually change direction in the air, making it very difficult for air defense to intercept. That's it. And they're really not military targets. You want to hit an air base, an army base, one of the troops in trenches, anything like that, large convoys of vehicles. They're not going for that. They're just trying to demoralize the civilian population. But obviously, it's imbecilic. They've tried far less than last year, partly because they don't have so many missiles. Moreover, Ukrainian air defense has improved so much. But Ukraine doesn't have enough air defense missiles to shoot down every single one of these things. And sometimes they're just going to have to let some of them through to conserve the stock of air defense missiles. But that would mean hitting an apartment block. And how would you feel if it was your apartment block got hit and you got killed? It's not you, your loved ones. You might say, no, we've got to shoot them all down if we can. And these are the agonizing choices. And that is the harsh reality of this war. So they're no longer hitting just Kyiv. Well, that might be slightly Kyiv's saving grace. Anyway, so the Russians have become increasingly adept and cunning at doing this. So it's thought that this is costing so much to continue this war. Yeah, in terms, you know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars aside on some of these days. So Kalibrs and KH-101s are the missiles that the Russians are firing. And they've got their hypersonic Kinjal or Dagger missiles as well. And the Ukrainians have got some Buk Soviet-era air defense, but they've also got the more modern American Patriots. South Korea recently gifted one to the United States that they purchased in the USA some years earlier. The Republic of Korea's law forbids them from arming a country during a conflict, but what they can do is gift it to the United States, which allow the US to keep that one for itself and give another one to the Ukrainians. You might say, well, effectively, that's tantamount to the same thing. But anyways, keeping Ukraine in the fight for the moment. And really, they're just hanging on. It's very difficult. Whilst will the United States Congress choose to pass this aid package? Will the European Union be able to pass this aid package? I mean, altogether, there'd be well over $100 billion worth of aid, which is about as much as they've received the 2 years of the war so far. And Hungary sticking its oar in, and that's the European Union. Now, I'm a European citizen. I don't want to be, but I'm not going to renounce my European citizenship. The only way I can have any sway over this is by remaining a European citizen, is if there is to be a coherent European foreign policy, and it might be rather easier now the United Kingdom's out, is if they say you can't have a single country veto. Out of the 27 member states, it's got to be two or three or whatever. And maybe it can't be a country with a minuscule population like Cyprus or Malta. It's got to be two or whatever, three countries adding up to say at least 10% of the European Union population or something like that. Now, indeed, EU states can donate money severally, even they don't do so jointly. That's why there's a ray of hope for Putin. He recognizes that European unity is fraying, that there's certain war weariness settling in the European Union countries. Germany's going to recession. That's the biggest economy in the European Union. May drag the rest of it down. They're going to become ungenerous. They've got to think of themselves. But good news for the Ukrainians is, you know, that the Turkish parliament has passed a law saying they will allow Sweden to join NATO. It's not going to happen just yet, in a few months perhaps. But then Sweden will be a big fillip to NATO. Sweden, with 10 million people, okay, not huge, but a really thriving economy, a superb tech sector, hasn't fought for over 200 years. So they had no military allies for all that time. So their military couldn't be large, it could be outstanding. So they're state-of-the-art technology and a huge military manufacturing industry for export. And then they could afford to donate a lot of their kit to Ukraine, because then they don't need it so much, because they're surrounded by allies. Their neighbors, Finland and Sweden, are both NATO allies. And the Baltic will be even more of a NATO lake than it already is. I would make that the price of Sweden joining NATO. You can join, but you have to give 10% of everything to the Ukrainians, a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. And the Turks, I mean, they're desperate for money. So because they've got this hyperinflation, they might say to Sweden, well, if you give us a bung, you know, money talks in Turkey. If you cross Erdogan's palm with silver, maybe not for him personally, for the public exchequer, they might, you know, lift all objections. And then Sweden would be in. There are other issues like, you know, Kurdish separate organizations, which are housed in Sweden, terrorist organizations, as the Turks see them. So this obviously is, you know, the Russians trying to break Ukrainian morale, not particularly going for energy infrastructure. Last year, that tried and failed, be less and less effective, partly as they're more and more connected to the European electric grid, particularly through Romania, but really just to exhaust their supply of air defense missiles. And then when a Russian, say, ground offensive begins in the spring, then that can really work. I think that might not begin till just after the presidential election in March, 70th of March, Paddy's Day, when Putin's re-elected. Because if it started, they could start just before, but if it started and it went badly, or would that queer the pitch? Or some people think, I don't like this. So that's why he's not referencing the war directly so much. The Ukrainians fired back into Belgorod. Now, I question the wisdom of that, because, you know, the Russians are saying that's killing civilians, and it seems to be actually true. A city of no great military strategic significance. The only thing is they're close to the Russian city to the Ukrainian frontier, so it's easy for them to hit. And it's been hit many times in this war, but really that does nothing. Isn't that just wasting ammunition? If I were Zelensky, I'd say, we're not going to be provoked by rage to lash out blindly. They're going to be precision strikes on military targets only. If they hadn't wasted any drones, any missiles or anything, any artillery on Belgorod or even hit in Moscow and concentrated solely on trying to break that Surovikin line, they might have had a bit more success with this counteroffensive. It's going to go on like this till March, really. And that's when the ground warfare might start again on a large scale. But I predict by then Avdiivka will fall, possibly Kupiansk as well. Right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Please donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com, subscribe on Patreon to see thousands of videos and read thousands of articles behind the paywall. Toodle pip.